From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the backyard advantage. I think everybody, if they want to have true success, they need to have something, an edge, an advantage. And I think in Sacramento, we actually have that advantage building. And today on the show, we have Dr. John Jackson. He is the man behind William Jessup University. One of the people that I respect most, he was actually one of the first guests that we ever had on our show, and we could reminisce about that, but a lot has changed since 2015, and so I just want to welcome you to the show and thank you for everything that you've done for me, my family, the Growth Factory, our region, and so many of today's up-and-comers.
Well, Mark, first of all, thank you for letting me come in. I just love what you've done with the place. I love who you are. I love Growth Factory. Just a sort of way to disclose right away. Jessup's an investor in Growth Factory, and I personally am an investor. And here's why. I think your key notion of backyard advantage is absolutely the core of the core. Like, in my view, I'm a believer in God. If God places you somewhere, then that's where you're supposed to make a difference. And I think about that backyard advantage. So much of what we have in our region is about relationships. It's about cooperative and collaborative impact. So, you know, everybody needs to be a hero, but on the other hand, you're not a hero alone. You're a hero with other people standing shoulder to shoulder, arm to arm, going after stuff together. And you have just embodied that for me. I've watched what's happened over the last 10 years, and oh my goodness, what an amazing story that we're writing together.
Yeah, and thank you. I appreciate that very much. And you know, you are growing leaders. We are investing into people with a lot of potential. Let's talk about that a little bit as we think about what's great for Sacramento's future, but what's great for America's future as well, and these people that we're investing into. So I'm investing into startups, typically early stage companies, founders that have this vision of the future. Maybe contrast that with the people that have the vision of the future that are at William Jessup today, or maybe you're trying to figure it out.
Yeah, that's such a great question. In some ways, I think you always think about the immediate, you think about the short term, you think about the long term, and then the really, really long term. Like I'm in my early 60s. If you would have talked to me when I was in my teenage years and said, hey, what will you be like when you're 60? I'd have had no clue. But when I was in my teenage years, I could have told you about my 20s. So when you think about it, when you're investing in a startup, for instance, you're probably thinking 1 to 5 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. So at Jessup, we're investing in some 18 to 25 year olds. That's our traditional undergrad. But then we have graduate programs, master's and doctorate. We're investing in mid-career people. But I got to tell you one other thing. We're not only investing in people for the 1 year, 5 year. Sometimes what we're doing is planting seeds that we think will fully germinate maybe over 2 or 3 decades. We just hosted a seminar on our campus. We do this kind of thing a lot. It was on faith, like we're a Christ-centered school, faith and AI, artificial intelligence. There's nobody, Mark, nobody who can tell you what AI, VR, augmented reality is going to look like 20 years from now. What we know is next couple of years, it's going to go exponential. 20 years from now, who knows?
I think this is the best time in my lifetime to be trying to figure out what you're going to do with your life, thinking about the opportunities that are surfacing right now that we can't even see yet, but there's this wave that we're going to be able to surf.
Yes, and I just have to jump on this, and I know maybe I hope you don't get hammered. I hope I get hammered for it. I worry a little bit about our culture on one aspect of this. Social media platforms, people get fixated on them, and they call it doom scrolling. Back during COVID, and again, I'm not trying to be political, people talk about social distance. I think there's an orientation to kind of have a negative view of the future, but I love the way you jumped on. This is our best time. This is the greatest time. People literally have the ability to invent their future today and for all the tomorrows, maybe in a way that's never been exceeded since we've been alive. There's so much opportunity. And part of what I am hoping and praying for our culture is that we have an opportunity and hope and expectation culture. That's why I love entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs are always willing to take the next step. They'll get knocked down. The wall will jump in front of them. I don't know any entrepreneur who hasn't had multiple failures.
But I agree.
the key to entrepreneurship, man, is fail forward fast. Get your failure, get it under your skin, learn from it, and fail forward and get up and fight again. You don't get knocked out in the first round, second round. You just keep going.
One of the things that has been helpful for me is this philosophy around building from the inside out, right? Get myself right, get my family right, hopefully give my community, help my community a little bit, help America, help the world. But getting me right feels like the first step in deciding what I want to be like. And so what I do is I get up every morning at zero dark 30,
yep,
and I remind myself what that is so that I think about it more. I think what we think about most, we actually become.
Yes. So I'm a numbers guy sometimes. So let me give you a quick number. Millennials, that would be certainly much younger than me, a little bit younger than you. 78% of millennials who were surveyed said their number one need in life, number one need is meaning and purpose. Now, you can either get depressed about that or actually get encouraged. Everybody needs a why. Everybody needs to know, this is who I am. This is what I'm all about. Once you get that figured out, you get that center kind of established, the foundation built, then you can go after it in your life. So I love your practice. You and I have talked about this before. You have a disciplined morning routine. And I think that's so important. Have something in your life that gets you centered, gets you focused. Doing it first thing in the morning is the best for most people. And then you identify, who am I? Where am I going? What's my day about? What's my life about? And like you said, I want to say this, I'm a leadership guy. The hardest person you will ever lead is yourself. But once you can lead yourself well, then that can ripple out to leading others.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about our whys for a minute. Let's let you start. You share your why, and maybe your why intersects with my why, and I love it when that happens.
Okay. So again, straight up disclosure, I am a Christian. I have a relationship with God that's at the core of my life. There's a verse in the Bible, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. All these things will be added unto you. So here's John Jackson's why. I want to invest my life in high impact people and organizations for kingdom causes. Now, what that means is I'm involved in all kinds of non-religious, irreligious, occasionally anti-religious settings. I just go into those settings. But the goal of my life, the why, is I want to look at people. I want to look at a Mark Haney and go like, why do I want to be friends with Mark Haney? Why do I want to support Growth Factory? Why do I want? Because I see what's happening. You guys are having a ripple effect of good. So that's, I try to invest my life in high impact people and organizations for kingdom causes. So I think about that. Jessup, like, I care about students. I really do. I care about our faculty. I care about our staff. But to be honest, I'm playing the long game. There's people whose names I do not know. There's departments whose inner workings I don't fully understand. But I'm investing in helping create an ecosystem where rock stars, where heroes are being made and shaped. Sometimes I don't know their name. Sometimes I don't understand all that's happening. But I'm trying to cultivate the ecosystem so that they can be launched from there. We are your growth factory. We're trying at Jessup in some ways to be a launch factory. And that's the primary place where I'm investing myself now.
Wow. And it's definitely working. And I have this small sampling of people that have come through my life, worked for our companies that are straight out of William Jessup, and they're just the best people in the world. And again, it's a small sample size, but your reputation speaks for your success.
Well, thank you. And that's, the hope is that you'll create an atmosphere where people say, I want to be a person of character. I want to be a person of diligence. I want to work hard. I want to be a great employee. I want to be a great employer. We have a law firm locally. We just have been telling the story about a lot. We don't have a law school, but 10 of the 30 employees out of this law firm are Jessup grads. So we started figuring out, why do you have 10 Jessup grads? And the lead attorney, Alex Medina, said this. He said, we hired two people from Jessup, just administrative roles, and they were great. And so we started thinking, every time we get an app that has a Jessup background in it, we're putting it at the top of the pile. He said, so far we've hired 10. They're amazing. Well, that obviously does my heart good. And that's what you want to create. And again, those 10 Jessup grads are being a part of a law firm that's making a big difference in our community. You and I are involved in some economic development. I love, again, what Growth Factory does, Backyard Advantage, pouring into entrepreneurs. I think entrepreneurs are the heartbeat of America. I love people who invent the future. Can I tell you a quick story?
Yes.
So sometimes I'll tell my wife stuff that I don't put in print, but can I say the word crap on your
show? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So this is, by the way, if I shouldn't have, I'm sorry, but for me, that's not a swear word. So anyway, so we were at the beginning of COVID, chaos, pandelirium, who knows what's going to happen. And again, not being political, it just was a hard, hard season. And I said to my wife, we talked about some political things, and I said this, I hope what happens, because a lot of people were shut down. I said, I hope people go into their garage and they invent crap. Mm-hmm. And the reason I said that was, I think innovation often comes out of crisis. Innovation comes out of conflict. It comes out of crisis. It comes out of pressure. And I just know that in a lot of American people, and people around the world, but in America specifically, people sometimes get to where they cease innovating. They cease having a vision for the future. And crisis sometimes will cause people to think of new ways. So sure enough, during COVID, when we do a historical review, I'll bet we're going to see this. A lot of people went into garages. A lot of people took their business and literally had to change direction to survive. That crisis brought about innovation. I'm so excited about the potential for that.
It is. And I have noticed that as well. And I think you're right in terms of COVID being the... really, it's a thing, whether it's good or bad. It was something that happened, but it caused a lot of us to pause.
Yes.
We invented the growth factory during COVID.
Yep.
And I was an angel investor prior to that. And we decided, well, what are we going to do with what we got? And we had the makings of the growth factory. And so we launched that during COVID. And so I think you're right. And I also think that tough times force us to be innovative, that you almost have to be innovative in order to survive. And also tough times or changing times creates opportunities. So there's these new opportunities that surface when people work from home all the time or different things like that that we found during COVID. Well, okay, let's talk about today now. I'll go back to my why in a second, but as long as we're on this track, let's talk about there's been a pretty big recent change in America over the last 2 or 3 months, and just in the last few days, we have a new president. Yep. He's talking about a lot of change. He's implementing a lot of change. There are people that are looking this like this is, oh no, you know, and then there's other people that are seeing this as a very opportune time to build.
Right, right. And I think what's a good perspective about that is, let's say it's stormy outside. That's either a great tragedy or it's an opportunity. And I think in some ways, we're likely not in control, most of us, of what happens in the external environment. What we're in control of is our response to it. And so I would just encourage people, whenever people are going to watch this and think about this, I would encourage people, what you can control is your attitude. You can control your perspective. John Maxwell, a favorite leadership author, used to say that attitude determines altitude. And you think about that, and your attitude can say, oh my goodness, we're in the worst of times. Or your attitude can say, you know what? Times are really hard. Times are challenging. They're uncertain, but I'm going to make the best of it. And so one of the things I'd like to say to your audience and friends about you is that you established Growth Factory during a challenging time, partly because I think one of your highest gifts is that you are a bold visionary, you're creative, but you're also a uniter, you're an aggregator. You bring people from a variety of different perspectives and you bring them together. This, even your word, Backyard Advantage, is about community. It's about connection. It's about the shared opportunity that we have. So I look at this time right now, to be honest, Mark, and say, this is the greatest time. This is an opportunity. And that, by the way, that's not a political statement for me. That's a perspective on reality that says, we have this amazing freedom. I have a lot of friends who are immigrants. I happened yesterday to have lunch with three of my friends from the Slavic community. I love those people. Oh my goodness. Most of them came from very pain-filled backgrounds. They came from countries and settings where they just didn't have a lot of opportunity. When they come to America, whether we're going up, whether we're flat plateaued or going down, this is the greatest country on the planet for them because they have freedom. As a native-born American, I need to learn from them. And so every time I'm around them, I feel like I get juiced up with opportunity.
I agree 100%. And I've got some friends in that world as well. And it's inspiring. And I've had a number of immigrants that have come on the show, or maybe they're even second generation. And they by and large, have a drive that is very special to watch.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your why, and then okay. I want to ask you one more question.
Okay. So my why is all about opportunity and creating opportunity through commitment. And that's really kind of what I wrote my mission statement about. With future generations in mind, I will help create opportunity for my family, my friends, and my community. And as they succeed, I succeed. And that mission, I have it tattooed to my soul. It's basically guided me through all the, I guess, strategic type of decisions. Yep. And in some level, that it kind of guides me on a daily basis. But it really is around creating opportunity for people who are committed. And so I'm really, that's why I'm drawn to entrepreneurs so much, is they're the most driven people that you'd want to meet. And those are the people that I love helping create opportunity for. Yes. And to me, there's a sense of, it's a really rewarding feeling to be helping people that are really driven. And I feel like it makes me better to be around them.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, because you use the word opportunity and you use the word commitment. Those are core to your mission statement. So talk to me a little bit, since I run an establishment that does a lot of formal learning, structured learning, specific degrees, credentials, certificates, et cetera. When you think about opportunity and commitment, tell me about learning. We know that entrepreneurs learn from failure. We also learn from success. We learn from other people. How important is somebody's willingness to be teachable, somebody's ability to learn? How important is that for opportunity and commitment?
I feel like that's kind of in the middle of it. In some ways, I think of that as kind of a humility component.
Wow,
right? To be able to be coachable or teachable takes a sense of humility as well. And so I think that that's a key component of the kind of people that I like to invest into. When we invest into companies, we really are investing into people.
Yes,
and humility
yes.
is at the center of that. But I think commitment is something that, I mean, a lot of people start things,
right?
Our world needs more finishers.
Yes, there we go. That's
and
good.
When you start something like something that you want to build into something really special and big, we both know that there are going to be several pivots along the line, and I call those pivots, but there may be that we can call them failures, right? Yeah. You fall down, you get back up, you go different, you attack from a different direction. There's going to be so many of those when you start a company or start something big in your life. And if you don't have a commitment level to that vision, that dream, that goal, those people that have invested in you, then you're much less likely to succeed.
So I want to jump on that for just a second, and it'll be a little surprising for me as a college president to say this, but I think there's formal education. And one of the greatest things about getting an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree or a master's or doctorate is that whole idea of being a finisher. Like when you're an employer, you can look at somebody who has one of those degrees and say they started a course and they finished it. And that's really good. But now this will be the shocking part. I don't think every person needs a 4-year college degree.
You're a
college president.
University president.
And for entrepreneurs out there, I'm in the business of selling college degrees. On the other hand, I think this, we are now, maybe more than ever before, we're in the season of what I would call just-in-time learning. Many years ago in manufacturing and retail, we had just-in-time inventory. Now I think we're just-in-time learning. We're going to have certificates that lead to credentials that are stackable to degrees. And anybody who gets a degree and who thinks they're done learning is going to get left behind in our world. Like, I'm not afraid of AI, not afraid of AI whatsoever. Yes, I have concerns about ways technology might be used, but I'm not afraid of it. But I do know this, that the ability to learn and utilize technology and to grow consistently in your respective field or endeavor, that's a critical part. So the ability to be a lifelong learner, maybe get a certificate as a stepping stone to a credential with a few certificates, as a stepping stone to a degree. I think that's the world that we're entering in. It's a brave new world. But I think, for instance, let me just say this. We need more welders. We need more HVAC people. We need more plumbers. We need more electricians. And what I say to my kids and any friends is, look, if that's the route you're going to take, then please do this. At least take a couple business classes somewhere. Because someday you might want to own the plumbing business. Someday you might want to own the HVAC or welding business. And it'd be good for you to know a little bit about business when you're 20, when you're 22, because maybe when you're 30, 35, you want to own the business.
I agree 100%. And I think one of the things we were talking about AI earlier, and with artificial intelligence comes this need for power, electricity, right? We have this, We're underdeveloped as a country in what's needed for electricity. So how many more electricians, I mean, you brought that up. Yeah. How many more electricians are we going to need just because of AI?
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that people don't like to talk about the complexities of these things, but I don't care where you are on the climate change argument. Nobody who looks at the data thinks that we need less electricity, less power in the future. We need more and dramatically more. Where are we going to get that from? Well, it's going to take electricians. It's going to take people who are able to do plumbing, are going to be laying pipe across a variety of things. We've got right now offshore, onshore. We've got solar. We've got wind. Nuclear might be part of the conversation in the future because it's one of the most, as I understand it, I'm not an expert, but it's one of the most exponential pathways to increase our electrical output, our power capacity. So you're absolutely right. We need more electricians. I know we have a residential crisis in our nation. How do we get more and more accessible housing for a varied workforce? Like you, I've got kids. I got grandkids. I want them to be able to live in this region. How do we get housing? I'm all for $1 million homes, 100% for them, multi-million dollar. But I'm also for homes in today's dollars that are $300,000 and $400,000. How do we get that available to the workforce? Because if we don't, we're going to have a real crisis, and we need more framers, carpenters. We need more HVAC to build all those houses that we desperately need.
I agree. Well, let's think about that for the future, so that people coming into William Jessup haven't necessarily decided what they want to do. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I think this really is the prime opportunity for somebody who's coming into the workforce, for somebody who is maybe going to pivot in their career, if it's early in their career. It's the opportune time. But I feel like a lot of people aren't seeing the opportunity, as we discussed, and aren't feeling like there's as much hope.
Yeah.
How do we help them to pivot? And I don't know if you're seeing those people come to William Jessup or we're just seeing them in society.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. I will say this, that the impact of COVID, we're recording this in 2025, the impact of COVID very much affected, we think it's a 3 to 5 year period where students' learning experience was so troubled, so much disequilibrium that they really got behind educationally, but there also became this cultural thing of disruption, disequilibrium, and we do have kind of this negativity. So here's my view. My view is we got to get back to the earlier ages. I think I'm biased, but I'm biased for a reason. It all starts in the home. I think every study that's ever been done says that a home helps produce the context. And so I don't care where you're on the political spectrum, we want good, positive, healthy homes. Kids get raised in good, positive, healthy homes. That gives them a good, positive outlook on life. Then what we need is schools. Schools that partner with parents. Again, I could get kind of political, but I'll just say this. If the school and the family are separated, or even if they're at odds, that is not good for anybody. It's not good for the family, and it's not good for the school. So we want families and schools to partner together so that kids get a positive outlook. They have a future. Every single child is precious. I mean, you'll get me to preaching soon. Every single child is precious. They're amazing. They have unique opportunities. We need to help them experience that. So by the time they get to junior high, everything I just said was elementary. By the time they get to junior high and senior high, they ought to be dreaming. They ought to be dreaming some dreams about who they could be. I wanted to be a pro ball player when I was 14, 15 years old. Got to the point where I thought, well, I'm really good.
What sport?
Baseball. I want to be a pro baseball player. So I was thinking, I'm good. I was pretty analytical. I'm good, but I'm not great. So at 15, I had a life crisis, but I had a dream. When I had that life crisis and figured out I was good, not great, I had to make a shift. Okay, if I'm not going to be a pro ball player, which I've been thinking about all my life, what am I going to be? Well, I think each student, each child, each student, each adolescent needs to have a dream, and we need to foster that at home. We need to foster that in school, church, community. So pouring into young people's key. When they get to, like, let's say college age, I really believe this. We got to give people freedom to discover who they are and then say, what's the best path for you? For a lot of people, going straight from high school into a voc tech setting is the best thing for them. For other people, going to maybe a community college. I'm good friends with community college presidents and leaders. I'm big on that. That might be the best thing for them to explore. You go to a place like Jessup or Sac State or UC Davis, great schools. At Jessup, we work hard on developing a sense of character. Who are you? Why are you? Where are you heading? And whatever they major in, this is what we know. That might not be the rest of your life. You can get a business degree, an English degree, a health degree, and think that's what you're going to do. But our world changes, right? Most of us don't have a straight line in life. So we want to equip people with how to think. We want to people with the ability to adapt. You know, culture changes. I don't know what technology will be here 20 years from now. But if people know how to learn, if they know how to adapt, if they know how to work in teams, little side note, I went to three different industries about 5 years ago, just before COVID, 5-6 years ago, and said to them, what are the best skills that you're looking for? All three industries, very separate, said three things. We want people who can work on a team, who can manage a project, and who can oversee a budget. When I heard that from industry leaders, went right back to Jessup and I said, in every class we're doing in these areas, let's help people work with teams, manage a project, and oversee a budget.
Wow. I love it when you said learn how to think or how to figure things out. It's really the key to, I think, happiness. And I do think it goes back to the family. I agree with you 100%. We all have this little voice in our head that says, you can do it, or no, you can't, or, you know, just that thing talking to you. And that first voice, I think, as a child, as a two-year-old, as a four-year-old, it's coming from your mom and dad.
Yeah.
Your mom and or your dad are shaping that little voice in your head from those early, early ages. And it affects how you approach walking onto an athletic field. I think it affects how you handle anything in your life that takes a little bit of courage. It comes from those first voices.
That's exactly right. And I love the way you said that. Those voices that tell you you can, when there's other voices saying you can't, if it comes from dad, if it comes from mom, your family, and certainly school and community can help as well. I think family's the ideal, most important structure. But if you've ever seen an athlete or a performer of any kind, an artist, let's say, it's scary. It's risky to get up to an at-bat, to take a shot, to sing a song, to play a note, to dance a number. Those are all things that are very risky. But if you got people at home going, you're awesome, you got this, you can do this, it gives people the confidence to try out things that later in life, even if they don't become professional athletes or artists or other things, they then have the courage to try. And I just wouldn't underestimate the importance of that. Having voices in your life that tell you you can, help you discover who you are. And that's just a powerful part of life's journey.
I live by the motto that everything is figure outable, right? You can figure out anything if you...
I'm going to look that up in the dictionary. Is that a dictionary?
It's a Markism. If you have enough imagination,
yes.
If you have enough inspired action, and if you have enough stick-to-itiveness, you can figure anything out. So why not figure out something to do in your life that is great? I think a lot of people look at life as this setting, and you've got to go in and not mess things up, live happily, don't break anything. When really in life, you can actually have your own personal effect on what life is, for what the world becomes, and you can actually create what life is for the rest of society and make your mark on the world.
So here's, and maybe it's just the way you and I are wired, but I don't think so. One of the things I hear you challenging all of us, and I would say I just am 100% with you, we need to elevate our aspirations. So many of us have, again, I have a preacher background, so I might say phrases sometimes. Some of us have settled with surviving. We just have settled. Like, my job in life is to get through Monday through Friday, then get to the weekend, then I'll do my things on the weekend, and I just want to not rock the boat, not make waves. I just want to survive in life. Well, I think life is not about surviving. Our aspiration ought to be not surviving. Our aspiration should be thriving. Our aspiration should be impact. It should be making a contribution. It should be meaning and purpose. And I think, again, as I walk just briefly through your workplace here, like, there's intention here. intentionality, not tension, but intention. There's intentionality, there's purpose, there's direction. And I even was looking at your spaces a little bit like, oh, I got it. And you have a sign on the front of your office that says, start here. And yeah. there's clarity, you know? So I think elevating your aspirations and having a sense of meaning and purpose, and then where clarity is important. And by the way, clarity maybe is generational, like you have clarity now, and then 3 years from now, you might have a clarity a little bit more refined, and people in your life will speak into it. The market will tell you, by the way, you develop a new toothbrush and nobody likes it and everybody rejects it. Okay, well, you failed. Your toothbrush was a failure, but you did learn things. Thomas Edison was asked one time, I think he had over 900 times to develop the incandescent light bulb. And a reporter asked him, are you depressed that you failed 900 times? He said, no. He said, I have failed 900 times and I know now what not to do to develop an incandescent light bulb.
Yeah.
Well, success came somewhere around his 1,000th try.
Crazy.
Isn't that a crazy story? But gosh, how many of us have lived that out? Failure, 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 success.
One of the things that we both see, you see it maybe more than I do because of where people are in their life, is these people that are trying to decide what they want to do, to get clarity on their purpose, get clarity on where they want to go in life. And one of the things that I feel like happens when you go through hardship or when you're trying to decide that is we just keep going and going and going and going and going and going, where at some point it's good to take a day off or a week off or a period of time to go find some solitude to maybe it's re-energized, but to give yourself the license to take a break and go decide for yourself and do some deep thinking.
You would have no way of knowing this, but just yesterday I spoke on this topic in Jessup Chapel. We do chapels a couple times a week. So I spoke on this topic and here was my thing. It was how to get in the slow lane. Mark, my natural orientation, me just left to my own device, I look at the checkout stand at the grocery store to get in the fastest lane. When we're at the airport, I'm thinking about which route will get me the quickest and how do I get through the lines as quick as possible. When I'm driving, I think about which turn lane will be best to get me most efficiently and quickly. I'm a person who likes to be right, who likes to be efficient, likes to be quick. Here's the problem with that. You'll never really settle your soul until you get to those moments where you give yourself permission to slow down. Yes, it's rejuvenating, but some of it also is slowing down and even stopping, being alone, being quiet, so you can hear. Now, for me spiritually, for me, it's hearing God, but for others, it might just be hearing what it is that's really going on inside, hearing what's clarity about who I am. Sometimes busyness covers up and clouds up what we know to be true inside. And we're just running as fast as we can, but we won't listen to the pain. We won't listen to the purpose. We won't listen to the promise, the future that we have. And we got to be really careful of that in life. That's such a good word.
I love that. Well, you are a man of God. I am a Christian as well. And when I think about Bible stories, the first one that always comes to mind is David and Goliath. That story, we all know David was the underdog and he figured out a way to take down the mighty Goliath. Yeah. And to me, I love, so no matter where you're at in life, you probably view yourself as an underdog, right? If you're watching this show or listening to this show, chances are, like me, you kind of feel like you're an underdog. Yep. And I think some of the things that David in that story showed was that you can figure things out and that if you have the courage that you can do big things.
Yeah, I so love that you're referencing that story, and without going too much into it, and I certainly won't do a Bible teaching, but David took what was in his hands, 5 smooth stones. He took a slingshot, which he clearly knew how to use, but I want to say one other thing. He also used what he had used before. Sometimes we take past life experiences and think, okay, that was for that season. Now I'm in a new thing. I have a feeling that most of us, learning is accumulative over time. And I don't think God ever wastes an experience. Skills you have, tools you have, relationships that you have. That's, by the way, one of the most valuable resources we have in life is people that we know and trust, and business partners and neighbors and community people who know us. So I think David took what he had in his hand. He took what he had used before, the slingshot, and he did what he knew how to do. And he did what he knew how to do in such a way that shocked the forces that were coming against him, in his case, a giant. Well, we've all had things come against us, right? How do you do that? Well, first of all, you say, take inventory. What do I have? What can I use to do this? And then you go after it. And I think a lot of people are shocked at the giants they can slay with the tools that are in their hand.
Agreed. Well, we were talking about Sacramento earlier. What are the biggest assets, the biggest, you know, what are you going to do with what you got is,
yes,
is how I might frame that. What do we got here in Sacramento? We've got the Growth Factory. We've got William Jessup. Why is this an opportune time to be growing your life here in Sacramento?
Yeah. So if I had a ton of money, and I don't, but if I had a ton of money, I'd make an investment in the Sacramento region. I personally believe it's the best region in the state in which to do business. Now, I understand you can make an argument that there's other places in the country you might want to invest, but this is the best place in California in which to do business. Why? Let me just list a few resources. Number one, we have an amazing sense of community here and connection. Within this 40, 50 mile radius, we have so many great resources. Yes, we do have the Growth Factory, but we have several other groups that are starting to support venture capital deal flow, as we talk about it. And that's a really huge thing. We've got amazing healthcare systems. Why is that important? It's because with our healthcare systems, we're able to create a fabric for a healthy, positive community. Education in this area, we've got award-winning educational systems, K-12 systems in this area, very, very strong. We've got community colleges that are great. We've got State University, Sac State, that's amazing. We've got UC Davis, very highly ranked research institute in the United States. You've got Jessup University. We've got others who are coming to the area. So you've got great education. Let me give another thing. Great individual communities, not just relationships, but think along that 50 corridor, think along the 80 mm-hmm. corridor, think along 65. Now, look at the geography we live in. Oh my goodness. In an hour and a half or so, depending on traffic, you can be in the Bay Area. That's great. But right here, literally, you can go 15, 20 minutes from anywhere around here. You're up in the foothills. You're up in a beautiful mountain country. People come from all over the world to get to where we have the privilege to live within 30, 60 minutes of. But I think our greatest resource is our people. People are moving to the Sacramento region. U-Haul's ranked it as one of the best destinations in all of the nation, is that people come here. They're shocked. How could U-Haul be coming to California and specifically to the Sacramento region? It's because there's so much desirable here. People are moving here, highly skilled people. We just recently, through GSEC, which you and I know a lot about, GSEC, Greater Sacramento Economic Council, just helped secure $1.5 billion investment from Bosch, an international company. That's an amazing thing. It's going to draw even more talented people. The people here are the best reason. The natural landscape, the education, the health, the environmental and entrepreneurial ecosystem. We just have all the table set with all the right resources.
I agree. And one of the things that I like to say is success breeds success. So one startup that is successful creates a lot of jobs and a lot of wealth, hopefully. And that those people that go through that experience, they have, if they don't have more money, they've got that experience is invaluable. And that success breeds more success. I think that starts at the family, but I think it happens in business. But it happens, I think, almost like as a culture for Sacramento.
So I love what you're saying. I'm gonna use a word I don't think I've used so far. It's the word transformation. Every once in a while, I'll say, I have a lot of friends from the recovery world, and I'll say something like this. Hi, my name is John, and I'm an addict. I'm addicted to transformation. Now, for me, again, as a Christian, I'm addicted to the power of God to change a human heart. The transformation. When that entrepreneur has success, guess what happens? Their mind and their heart and their relationships get transformed. They see the world through a totally different set of glasses. There's an excitement, a joy in their life. And when that happens, Mark, people all around them are transformed. I think transformation is in the air in Sacramento.
Interesting. So success principles, you've got thousands of them. One of the things, so I want you to share one. One of the things that I started doing more recently, I get up early and I do this little, I call it 3:15, the moment of truth and meditation. And then I go to yoga and get a good workout in. But I started something at the end of the night that that I started probably about a week ago. Is, you know, I'm in my early 60s as well. And so you can still learn and discover new habits that are helpful. But I've always believed that when I felt the feeling of gratitude, that it put me in the right. I just feel good about that. When I think about people that I appreciate, it makes me happy and it puts me in a good mindset. And so why don't I do that at the end of the night before I go to bed? Wow. Or, you know, before I watch TV, or whenever I have a chance maybe to talk to my wife toward the end of the day, is what am I grateful for? And it's not as much on a daily basis about, well, you know, I'm grateful for this life and, you know, all the big, big stuff. So many times it's like the little things of, I was so cool to see Brinley walk over the other day. I'm so grateful for that. They're like the minor things that everybody can have in their life. Yes. It's not like, wow, he's Mark Haney. He's got these things to be grateful for. I don't. Well, wait a minute. There are the things I'm grateful for are the little nuanced things, yes, that are like anybody could be grateful for if you really stop and look at it.
I love that. I love, first of all, that you highlighted gratitude, because gratitude is also a form of humility. Mm. When you're grateful for something, you're recognizing I'm not owed anything. So when, I don't know if you're talking about a granddaughter or whatever.
Yeah, my granddaughter walked over the other day unexpectedly. She's two.
Yeah, so I have grandchildren come to ask, if my grandchildren will come up to me and give me a hug and I get to snuggle with them, like, I don't know what's going on physiologically, but I'm sure endorphins or something else is getting released like crazy. So it's a form of humility, like recognizing that life is a gift. And being able to take the little things like, hey, you know, I was able to get up today. I was able to breathe. I was able to walk. Mm-hmm. I was able to, just the simplest things. Again, everybody tends to focus on the big, huge things. It's the minor, not minor, but the more common things that when you cultivate a spirit of gratitude, it positions you to be able to receive. Mm-hmm. When people are prideful and arrogant, oftentimes they're not positioned to receive. Who wants to give something to a prideful and arrogant person? Most of the time we say no, but a grateful person, a humble person, we actually want to give things to. So here's a key success principle. John Maxwell, a leader I referenced before, a great author, says everything rises and falls on leadership. And I love leadership. I really am committed to leadership. I think it's important. You're a leader. I think I'm a leader. I think leadership's important. But I have a corollary to that. Everything rises and falls in leadership. Yep, leadership is great. Here's my corollary. Everything in leadership rises and falls on relationship. I don't know that much about you, but I know your wife is critical to your life. I know that your children, and now I know your grandchildren, are critical to your life. You want to look at my life? Don't look at the piece of paper. Don't look at the degrees. Don't look at the position. Don't look at the title. Don't look at any of that. You look at my wife. You look at my children. You look at my grandchildren. Now, look at my friends. Relationships are what fuel leadership and success. Surrounding yourself with people who know you, who love you, kick in the backside if you need it, and help you become all you were meant to be, that's really key.
You're one of the most uplifting people that I've met in my life on a almost naturally, it feels like, right? It's not forced. It's not a show. It sort of just comes out of you. I've seen you around other people when I'm not even in the conversation at different events. You exude this positivity. Where did that come from?
Yeah, I think two things. I was so fortunate. My dad was a Baptist minister and he was a driver. He was a hard driver. He was an achiever. And he was about endurance. So I think for me, being able to be in the game, being able to go to the fourth quarter, you know, playing basketball or something like that, go to the fourth quarter to finish well, that's important. My mom was the consistency. My dad might have some highs and some lows, but he would say, you got to finish. My mom was the every day. So I had that amazing gift of family. So that's part of where I think it comes from, is that I got that good foundation. But beyond that, another thing, I just, I want to build up people, not tear them down. And so when I'm around people, I'm trying to see What's their greatest gift? What's their hope? What's their aspiration? I had a board member. She still serves on our board, a gal. And she, I spoke in a public place. And we confess a little bit now. I spoke in a public place, impromptu. Somebody asked me impromptu to say something. I did it. And I thought I did a really good job. So I came back to the table and finished the evening up. It was a kind of a big social affair. And this gal who's on my board came up to me afterwards and said, John, I just got to tell you this. I loved what your speech. You are such a nice person.
Mm. I could tell by the word, the way you used the word nice, that it wasn't, you didn't feel flattered.
I'm such a dude here and such a former athlete. I went to the car and I'm complaining to my wife. Did you know, I won't say her name. Did you know that so-and-so said I was nice? I mean, like, I thought I did a good job speaking. How come she couldn't say I was dynamic? I was awesome. I was powerful. That's what I wanted. Over the next couple of days, I brooded on that in a good way. I felt like me and God were having a conversation. She was actually giving me one of the highest compliments I've ever received. Because what she was saying is, the way you spoke honored the person that I was speaking about. And that's just really nice. So what are we going after? In my own humanity, the fact that I did a good job in that impromptu thing, I was kind of looking for attaboys and pats on the back, and my ego wanted to be stroked. And then over the next couple of days, because of what she said, I kind of had to readjust my heart. And so part of the thing I'll just say to you by way of that confession is, I want to be a person who's positive. I want to be a person who's building up people. I want to be somebody who's nice, because Lord knows the world has enough mean people. The world has enough destructive folks in it.
And your mother, sounds like she was instrumental or helpful in bringing that part of John Jackson out.
Oh, my mom, I just posted something on, I think it's Facebook, and my mom, God bless her, my mom, my father's in heaven, but my mother said, I posted something, a talk I did. My mother said, oh, I love listening to you. You get better all the time. Such a mom, such a great, great mom comment. So yes, my mother was and is the consistent every single time that my dad had the highest highs. My mom was consistent all the time. And that really fed into my life.
My mom, we grew up here in Roseville and didn't have a lot, especially when, you know, we were little kids, but we didn't know that. I remember asking my mom, are we rich? And my mom's like, Mark, we're rich in love. I'm like, what? Rich in love? Mom, are we rich? We're rich in love. Mom, you know, I felt good about where we were. I realized later as I get older, we had the railroad tracks running through our backyard. We backed up against the railroad, but my mom always brought this spirit of love and unity. And really, I think those are some of the best, those are some of the things that I sort of just grew up thinking about all the time, is how to build a tribe and how to be a part of a tribe and be a part of a family and a good teammate and those kind of things. And I think it all centers around love, and that came from my mom.
Yeah. I don't want to jump on a hobby horse, but it's been very wounding in my view to our culture when we have diminished the role of dads and we've diminished the role of moms. In my view, dads and moms are such amazing gifts in the lives of children. And I understand people face pain, people face tragedy, and they have pain sometimes in their relationship with their dad, or he's absent, or they have pain with their mom, or she's absent. I understand that. But ideally, we need to lift up the role of dads and lift up the role of moms. They are so formative in the lives of children.
And getting them to work together is huge, or getting, you know, not that I'm going to do it, but getting yourselves to work together, because I think when a child feels that mom and dad are a team, dad may be the hard ass, let's call it, or whatever, the driver, and mom might be softer, the love, it more demonstrative in terms of love, but getting them to work together is so key. Whether they're, I mean, I've been married 40 years, well, it'll be 40 years coming up in June, but I am around people that are not, you know, are on their second marriage, and it can cause a lot of challenge, and you probably see that as well.
All the time,
and
just,
but deciding that you're going to figure out how to work together as a dad or as a mom or as a, you know, former couple, current couple, to do what's right by the kid, instead of putting your own stuff ahead of that. Put the children first, because we're already pretty well down our paths.
So here's a way to, maybe it'll be a little psychological. I'm not a psychologist, but determine that you're going to be a builder in your own life and a builder in the lives of others. And you're not going to be what's called a narcissist. You're not going to be so focused on your stuff. When you have a child, and by the way, if you're in a second or third marriage, or you got whatever going on in your life, if you can be other-centered, if you can say, you know what, I'm going to sacrifice for the sake of my child. I'm going to commit to this marriage. I'm going to commit to this child. I'm going to be involved. And again, there's all kinds of circumstances. I understand the complexities. But if you can be other-centered and build up other people, man, what you get out of that as somebody who dedicated and consecrated your life to a greater purpose, wow. My mom is 86 years old, I think, 86 years old, and she's at the point in her life where she's got kids, grandkids, and great grandkids. And wow. So I'm telling her to stay alive, because I think there's a possibility she could stay alive to have great, great grandkids, which I think would be freakazoid and awesome.
I love it. Okay, so two more questions. Yeah. I'll kind of tee it up so that we don't go all day. I know you got things to do. So we're talking about kids, we're talking about family, we talked about William Jessup and education. Is there something that we should do differently as a society with these earlier years of education so that they're more ready to be prepared for William Jessup or Sac State or whatever, or learn on their own without college? Yeah. What can we do in our school systems to improve? What's the core, at the core of that?
Yeah. So my sister was 35 years public school teacher and administrator. She's amazing. She's probably the toughest one in her family. She's got three brothers, and we think she's tougher than all of us. So she was in the public school system. We've had homeschooling. We homeschooled 18 years. We've had private schools. We've kind of been exposed to a lot of them. This is what I would say to dads and moms. I know we live in a highly technical age, but listen, reading, writing, thinking, and speaking. Those are the fundamentals. You start working at that early on. You get your kids reading early. I get technology. I really do. I'm not a Luddite. I embrace technology. Get your kids to read. Help them to understand how to read, to write, to think, to speak, and master that early. Now I'm going to give you a dirty little secret. A lot of middle school and a lot of high school is really not designed to help accelerate learning. It's to help manage socialization. If you talk to a professional educator, they would tell you between 7th grade and 12th grade, there's really not 5 years of increased educational rigor and difficulty, line upon line, precept upon precept. It's allowing space for maturity and socialization. I think a strong dad and mom can help kids at earlier and early ages master the fundamentals when they're in elementary school, get to middle and high school, start helping shape their path. And then I've been really big on this recently. By the time they get to about 10th grade, have them start actually experimenting with some college level classes or with some voc tech classes. So for instance, community colleges have this, Jessup has this, Sac State has this. You can, when you're in 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, you can be dual credit, where you take a high school class you get college credit for, or you can be dual enrolled. You can be in your local high school and be simultaneously enrolled in Jessup, and you can get high school credit and Jessup credit. Let me tell you why that's important. You get accustomed to taking college classes early, and you get college units. I think we actually have students who take 30 units of college credit while they're in high school. That reduces the cost of college, which everybody wants to reduce the cost of college. You're going to go to college. You want to reduce the cost. Second of all, it reduces the time. Now, if you're not going to go to college, I still would encourage you, by about 9th, 10th grade, your student needs to be exploring who they are, their why. They're 13, 14, 15 years old. Let them explore some career things. We did homeschooling a lot. We did a thing called delight-directed learning. You got a kid who's into horses. You got a kid who's into motorcycles. You got a kid who's into sports. Help them use that delight area to facilitate learning. Help them read about baseball. I was a baseball guy, so I read everything written about baseball at the time I was a kid growing up. Help them read. Help them write. Help them think about whatever's their delight and use that as a vehicle to help facilitate learning. So I'm actually, contra some people, I'm for accelerating learning and getting people the freedom to learn earlier and to be very personalized about that. One last comment. I think AI has some danger, but I think AI will also help us personalize the educational experience, because Mark, you learn different than I do. and your wife learns different than you do. And we found this, by the way, about our bodies physiologically. Our bodies are all different at a cellular level. So the way we respond to medicine, to nutrition, is all personalized. That's the same thing I think AI is going to help us to personalize education for where that person is and their learning style.
One of the ways that I learned most looking back is on the football field and on the baseball field, playing basketball. Competitive sports were a big part of what made me who I am. So when I look back with gratitude about my education, a lot of things I remember learning were from coaches that were really tough on me, opponents that were really difficult to play against, competing to be first string or make the team. Those kind of things were some of the best lessons that I've learned. And they're sort of almost like real world type of experiences, because life is not handed to us on a silver platter. We have to go out and figure out how to compete and how to find the best within ourselves and then bring it to the world. And you can learn that in sports.
Yes. Yeah. You and I might get in trouble together, but I know we live in a world that, you know, this thing about everybody gets a trophy. We live in a world where competition's a reality, and being your best and helping other people be their best is where we need to be. I actually like it when I see really intense competition on the field, and then after the game, I see respect.
Yes.
Respect between the competitors. Like, I want to win. Like, we tease all the time. We have other Christian colleges that we're in NCAA D2 now, and there's a few Christian colleges we play against. In Jesus' name, I want to whoop them bad. Like, I want to win. But at the end of the game, like, this is what we do at Jessup. If you've ever been to a basketball game or baseball, at the end of the game, we circle up and we pray. Like, we just beat them, hopefully. Or if we lost to them, I hate losing. But if we want to be competitors. So what you said, same thing, sports background. I learned amazing life lessons in sports, teamwork. I learned a competition. I learned to push yourself. I had coaches who, I don't know if today they get by with what they did, but they were pretty brutal. But it made me better. I didn't wilt under that. I got stronger.
Yeah. Okay. So last question, as I promised, what did I not ask you that we should make sure that we let you have a chance to say?
Okay. This is going to be the strangest thing I'm going to say, but I hope maybe I said stranger things, but this will be one of the stranger things. You didn't ask me about what people should aspire to in their life, meaning, purpose, but I'm going to throw something out there that I think people underestimate. Today in the United States, our birth rate is not at population replacement.
Okay.
In other words, we're having too few babies compared to the amount of deaths. The only thing that's affecting U.S. population and keeping it stable is immigration. Here's what I would say to people. Do not despise marriage. Do not look down on family. I think that actually, I'm not saying you should look at 12 or 15, but I think that it's the natural order of things, that as we grow and develop, that people would actually look positively towards marriage. Sadly, we've had a lot of destructive time, maybe since the 70s forward. And I'm trying to encourage students on my campus to actually aspire to get married, to have a family, to build a great life. Like, what's wrong with that? That's like amazing. I'm saddened when I hear people say like, I don't know, men, especially young men, I don't know if I want to have a relationship. I don't know if I want to get involved. And they wait till they're 30 and then they maybe meet somebody, maybe don't. And then they're 35 and they think about having kids and they just delay all that. Or some of them get to 35 and 40 and they never get to experience it at all. So what you didn't ask me is what I'd like to fix. And one of the things I like to fix in culture or aspire to in culture was to have people say, I want to marry the right person. I want to be with the right person, build a strong family. That's part of the aspiration that I think is natural in life. And I would hope that for everybody is to have a great, loving family and relationship.
And to put that into why that might be important to you, and you might even look at this as something selfish, not you, John, but yeah, somebody might, that person, that young man that you were talking about is, if you build yourself the right kind of family, right? If you marry the right one and you raise kids together and do a good job, not only is that enormously satisfying and makes you happy, it continues to pay dividends throughout your life till the day you die, but it if done properly, we help each other, right? It's not like it's all about me, but like you have built a squad, just like having a good team that, you know, there's great continuity and everybody gets stronger if you've got a stronger family.
Oh, I love that. And I'll just even say this for those who might, this might be a little crass to some, but statistically, if you look at the Fortune 500, ask how many of them are married with children.
Like CEOs?
CEOs. And the answer is almost universally being married with children is one of the key factors in long-term success because you do build your team. Nobody goes alone. The old African proverb, you want to go fast, go alone. You want to go far, go together.
Yeah. Well, let's leave it at that. John Jackson, fun conversation. And you inspired me as you always do. Thanks for lifting us all up today.
Thank you, Mark. Such a privilege. I love you, love Growth Factory, and love what you're doing for our community.
Thank you. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.